Hello, hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of
The cool
Damn.
Cool down.
So I just want to start off by saying we had 100 episodes. We didn't have a full house. Ollie gets sacked, and all of a sudden, everyone's back in the studio. So that's amazing. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you for being in the house. As you can see, to my left-hand side, we've got Celo Lolo Color, a very, very happy United fan. I'd assume. We've got Nick, King of the North. A sort of confused Newcastle fan. We've got at the bottom, we've got Moses, a man who's been absent so long that now he's come back. We don't even recognize him because it seems like, I don't know, has life been tough for you there, Moses, with the facial hair? It looks like he's come out of prison. And then we've got Matt. He's finally got his goal line t-shirt there. Also super happy because why? Conte has 3 points for Spurs. And then, of course,
yep.
The disillusioned Wonga Denga brought back down to earth.
Gonna be so quiet this week. Gonna be so quiet.
No.
How's everyone doing?
Good.
Just can't complain, man.
Good to be back.
I think it's good that we're all here, actually, because remember we said Ole was going to dance on our graves. So now that he's gone, we did need to do a proof of life, make sure there were no graves for him to dance on. So I'm glad we all managed to make an appearance. Good to see you're all still breathing, guys.
He's gone. Yep. He's gone. Finally.
He couldn't hold on for two games. Goodness me. Just two more weeks we needed him there.
And he was probably going to beat you. That's the funny part.
Yeah, he had to bounce back. He's got that bounce back ability.
Yeah.
I mean, gents, look at this. Even Jason's saying, finally, full house. We've got Sam saying, packed house indeed, unlike the Etihad. Nice one, I like that. We've got Argentine boys. And then we've got, Pum's back in the house. So already, just because it's a full house, we've got our regulars in, locked and loaded, ready to go. But I think Ollie's a good topic to kick off with. I don't know if you want to kick off or anyone else. Wonga, you've started it because we know we're going to end off. Look, Wonga's already saying Ollie's a thing of the past. Mosa, you tell us. What did you think of this whole fiasco? You can tell us.
Fiasco, it's about goddamn time that he's gone. I think he was never ready for that role. The past window kind of let him down. He managed to make all the big signings that he was looking for. And that sometimes, you know, as we've seen with Chelsea and Lampard, gives a manager a whole host of pressure to deal with from the fans. I think, you know, his tenure was a little bit exciting. You did see Man United try to play more expansively with the approach coming off the slump of Jose Mourinho and other managers. But, yeah, it was about time. It was an eventuality that he had to go. The club management, I think, potentially have some explaining to do regarding the timing. Yes, I know they got walloped by Watford, but you know, they could have taken the same action maybe a month or two ago regarding Ole's future and making and giving the replacement an opportunity, because the difficulty now is that the replacement won't have that international window and is going to lose a lot of African players and he's going to contend with other teams kind of gelling already. So he's just going to come straight into the thick of things where if this decision was done a month ago, at least there'd be some kind of preparation which the new manager could put in place. And right, the new managers are coming out of the market. Like Conte is one manager, for example. He was there.
You say new managers. I mean, I don't think any of the names being linked on new, Musa. So that's an interesting sort of
the new
statement.
New United manager, the potentially okay, new go, United go, manager. Yes, they kind of like. They're kind of vacating the market, right? Like if this was done maybe a month ago, Conte would have been in hot contention. But because they didn't strike, there's now managers like Conte leaving the scene. So it's going to be interesting to see who does fill the position. But yeah, I think it was in time. It was just about time that Ole was gone.
Yeah, and he has a good question. Celo, or let's actually ask Matt, because Matt's paying attention. Yeah, because he's looking so good in the shirt. We're going to throw this question his way. Jason's saying, would you guys agree that Ollie at least steadied the ship after the quick changing of the previous managers? At least.
I've read some stuff about this, and I think there's an argument to be made that he was actually a really ideal interim manager, and the mistake they made was keeping him on permanently, because he did do a really good job of kind of improving that the dressing room morale and kind of getting the team back to basics, but he's not been long term, we've seen there've been some challenges. And I think
100%.
In that regard, we mustn't dismiss everything Ole has done. I think it's easy now to look back and say he wasn't right for the job. But for a long time, he was actually really doing some impressive stuff there at United. So, he definitely steadied the ship. It was time to move on probably already at the end of last season. If United was a more ruthless, if they had a more ruthless boardroom, I think they would have done that. Or if he was a less popular figure, I think that's also been part of the challenge all along, is that Ole is a well-loved figure even now. You know, even after this reign, there's still loads and loads of Man United fans who really like the dude and don't, there's quite a lot of United fans who would have happily kept him stuck around. So, you know, there's always going to be that element. But yeah, he did a better job than he maybe gets credit for, but it was time to go. That's true.
And then one more question there. Celo, I just want to ask Matthew one last thing here from a Poch perspective. If he does fill in that hot seat, what are your thoughts there? Because that's a question that Arjun's asking.
Yeah, look, obviously every Spurs fan loves Poch. What he did for us was incredible. And I wished him well when he went to PSG. I think he's a fantastic manager. He deserves success. Part of me is kind of worried about the United job for him because it is chaotic. I think there's a lot of stuff behind the scenes at United that we don't know about that I think affect managers there. You see it time and again where things don't seem to run smoothly. That said, there's an incredibly talented squad there. And a manager as good as Poch would probably be able to get some results out of that team. So it could be a good fit. It would be sad to see him succeed in somewhere else, but I think, you know, you've got to look forward. You've got to kind of keep moving on, and Spurs look like we're in a relatively good position now. So if he goes there and he's happy and successful, we'll wish him well.
Yeah. Celo, you can jump in now. You can jump in. Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, I think with amen. As Musa was saying, long overdue. I think the previous international break that we just came from now was the perfect opportunity for us to change the manager, because at least would have given the new manager a 2-week time frame to at least work with the players before obviously coming back to play the Watford game. But yeah, I think it's quite, you know, poetic, the fact that Donny van de Beek has scored Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's last goal. You know what I mean?
How's that? And comes on, gets some game time, scores, and the light goes home. Thanks for coming.
And he had a great game. He had a great game. Yes. You know, he set up a nice chance for Ronaldo, which Foster saved. You know, he played very well. You know, he had a very good game. Sancho was playing on the right wing, surprisingly, and who crossed the ball to Ronaldo that Ronaldo hit to Donny? Sancho did. You know what I mean? Playing on the right wing, you know, play players in the right positions and let's see what they can do. Because now you'll be critical of players, but they're playing out of position or they're not even getting the game time required. So let's see what happens.
Sancho played well as well.
Exactly. He played very well. You know, so I think Man United, you know, there's a lot of mess, in the board level and so on and so forth. You know, I think, if we're being honest, the person that's failed the most at Man United is Ed Woodward. He's the person who's come in and he's appointed all these managers that haven't.
And now he's staying longer.
Now he wants to stay longer to make sure that he finds a person to appoint. I think definitely he should have left at the end of the previous season, and we should have gotten someone different, a different direction. The Glazers need to stop, you know, focusing or leaning on him and saying that he should be the person to guide them and so on. You know, he's a good commercial man. Commercial side of things, he's done so well for Man United. You know, I can't take that away from him. You know, but I just felt that there should have been someone just to focus on the football side of things, and he focuses on what he's good at, which is the commercial side of things. Him maybe staying longer isn't great. I think it's concerning. But let's see what Man United does. We'll probably appoint Stevie Bruce interim manager till next week, and then have another interim manager until the winter break. And then Phil Neville will come back or something. So
I thought that was quite amusing. I actually want to jump in and just chat about the potential new appointment, but I thought it was quite amusing because, you know, I got a lot of grief from maybe not so much you guys, but a lot of Newcastle fans get grief about giving, you know, stick to Steve Bruce, but wouldn't it be just beautiful if he had to go? He's a messiah there, you know. Why don't you just take him? Because he's such a good manager and so lovable.
What's
hilarious is just how the hypocrisy that goes around in football, so Newcastle fans are being spoilt, and why should they not give, you know, Steve Bruce a chance when he's got the worst record in Premier League history? Why don't you take him then, Man United fans? You know, if he's a legend, you know, why not? If he's
but
he's
been given that, it's just been given, out there.
Yeah, he's been given the United.
United just did the appoint a club legend thing, and it didn't, you know, then they had 3 years of this. So I think they need to go the other way now. If they're going to appoint a club legend, I'm pretty sure there are better candidates than Steve Bruce.
He's not a club legend, first and foremost.
Yeah. But hang on.
He won the first Premier League.
He's 1,000 games. He's won the Premier League. Like, what do you
he's
mean?
Not he's not a club legend. He's your captain.
He won like the first Premier League title.
No, man. Pallister's more of a legend than him, man. So
more of a legend. What does that mean?
More of a legend. Yeah, no one's saying more.
Legend or not. Like, you're either a legend or you're not a legend. There's not some grade, like, where you're just a dude, then you're like a nice guy, then, you know.
So what was quite interesting.
You're going to be a little bit of a legend or you're a lot of a legend. You're a legend or
a legend. Yeah, legend is legend. It's like eggs and penalties. You are or you aren't.
He's not a Man United legend.
You'll upset a lot of Man United fans if you had to say that in Manchester.
Particularly Steve Bruce.
Swiftly, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the talk radio Talksport. I'm sure most of you have seen. Yeah,
so
I listened to it. I listened to it all day, and they had spoken to a journalist from France. I can't recall his name, but he's very close with Poch. Jim White and Simon Jordan spoke to him, and from what I understand, and from what I understood from the interview, is Poch is ready to go if the compensation can
tomorrow,
be organized.
Today,
like he's ready to go. But there's so many moving parts here because PSG have the upper hand here. They need to have a replacement lined up, and Zidane would potentially be that person. But there's moving parts with his situation because he might be waiting for the France job. Because there is talk that like he doesn't want to go into a big contract with PSG and then he doesn't get the opportunity to coach his national team. So it's quite interesting. But from what I understand from that interview is that they reckon that Poch will leave immediately because he is not happy in France at the moment and he will be there before the end of the year. So that could be very, very, very interesting. But from a Man United point of view, spending so much money paying Ole's new contract that they just gave to him out, and then they'll probably have to spend £10 million on Poch to get him out of his contract.
Nick, you
and
should
what's
know
interesting,
Nick,
he's Nick never, he this. Hasn't, he hasn't even Nick, won a trophy. That is the funniest
Nick.
Thing.
Never yes, won a trophy. Yes, that's the truth.
Matt
did.
Knows all about that one. Poch Matt knows
did.
That.
Did he win with PSG?
He
won with PSG. The league with PSG.
Won a cup.
Was it a cup? So a week after arriving at PSG, he won.
Yeah, that was like speech.
Yeah,
come on.
Guys, you come on. Asterix. Asterix.
You won a cup. It counts.
It's like Beatles winning the Champions League.
Okay,
come in.
Who's Nick to hand out asterix here? Can we be honest? Out of this panel, how can Nick be the one handing out asterix?
But Nick, I don't understand why you have to talk about money, Nick.
No, I'm just saying it's quite funny. You're going for a manager that hasn't won anything. I'm saying you're going for a manager that hasn't won anything.
Nick, if you've got the money,
and that's
what I'm saying. If you're going for a manager, yeah, spend the money, but spend the money on a coach that's won something.
He's won two trophies with PSG.
That begs a serious question as well.
Wait. In a Farmers League, there's two teams there. What are you talking about, bro?
Nick is saying, Poch
Steve
Poch
Bruce can
right
win a trophy
United,
there,
but
PSG.
Steve Bruce is,
never.
Steve Bruce is right.
I love the vision.
Unfortunately, it just shows you like how. Listen, I love Poch. I think Poch is good. I think he'll be a good manager for them. But it's not going to be. Listen, it's not going to happen overnight. If Man United want instant successes, which clearly they do, they've been wasting their time for the last 6 years.
Guys, there's no guarantee. Guys, there's no guarantee.
Yeah, there's no guarantee except if you go get Thomas Tuchel and you go win it that season. So like, but there is a guarantee. Yeah. If you go and spend the money that you want to spend and go get the coach that's going to sort it out with that squad, Celo. You can go
Conte
coach
would have been the best
LA,
choice.
Bro. Come on, man.
I think Conte
would have been the best choice.
Would have been the best choice.
Yeah, so why didn't they get him? You can smile there. You're welcome They've to smile while I talk about
Yeah, but Matt doesn't have
Daniel the quality. Daniel is ruthless. That's the difference.
Twiddling their fingers.
Matt
yeah.
doesn't have the quality of squad that Man United has, guys. But yeah,
he
but
doesn't
I think
need
on the
quality
the, on
of squad.
The, On the Poch thing, obviously, I think Poch wants to leave PSG because Leonardo signs the players. He doesn't consult with him to say, hey, listen, which player do you want to get and which player don't you want to get? They just sign. They just sign players that they think they want to get and which leaves Poch without the power. You know what I mean? And then then you have to deal with so many egos at the club where if you wanted... you actually want a coach to be in control of the signings that they're making, but obviously Leonardo's signing, and Leonardo is best friends with Mino Raiola. So, for instance, like Donnarumma, for instance, was signed because of the relationship that Leonardo has with Mino Raiola. And I think they signed another Mino Raiola player. I just can't remember if it's I think okay Verratti is a Mino Raiola player, and then Hakimi is also I think a Mino Raiola player. So obviously just that in itself, man, the relationship that he has with those agents, I think obviously
I also heard that journalist said that he hasn't even bought a house in France yet. He's still staying in a hotel 11 months later. He's still based
correct. I think I think his family. Crazy. I think his
family are still in UK.
Is in London. Yeah, it's in London. Yeah. I think his son is a. I think his son was at Spurs' development, so I don't know where his son is now, but they're still in the UK. Similarly to Benitez when he's obviously left Merseyside, he left, but he still lived in Merseyside. His family was still there, you know. So I think obviously
quick question, Silo. If Poch were to come to United, do you think he'd achieve some level of success in the season that he arrives or the following season afterwards? Given that, his current context is that he's getting frustrated by potentially the club making signings and him not being totally in control. Do you think he'd have that opportunity at United, and will it actually yield any positive results?
Hey, man, I think, you know, with Man United, it's not even about the coach's capability sometimes. I think it's just the board and what does the board allow you to do? You know what I mean? I think certain managers have been so frustrated in terms of not being backed. You know, Mourinho came second, and then the following season, we signed one player. You know what I mean? We signed one player for Mourinho where Mourinho wanted, you know, other reinforcements into the squad. And Mourinho won the Europa League, but we still didn't back him. So that was probably frustrating for Mourinho. You know, Van Gaal won the FA Cup, then got fired the next day. You know, so I think Man United in itself as a club doesn't foster an environment for these coaches to be successful. I think Fergie was successful under the Glazers because Fergie was in the job and had always been successful. You know what I mean? So I think he just knew how to do it. You know,
different to Wenger, technically speaking, at Arsenal. I don't know if you've got to compare the two. It's like the American owners let the men do their thing because they did it for so long. No one really questioned them. Now it's this new sort of age of football that all these other moving parts need to take place. And you actually need someone to work in assistance with them who actually know a thing or two about football. And I think that's where they're getting caught a little bit from a United perspective. Matt, final point that you want to add to this before we move on.
Well, I just thought, I think my last observation is kind of the difference in terms of how Spurs and how United handled the change of manager. And it's kind of, you know, Spurs got rid of Nuno. It was very ruthless. It was very kind of, to a certain extent, kind of unexpected, despite the fact that results have been so bad. The fact that they made the quick decision was sort of unexpected. But they very quickly, it was sort of a day later, Conte was in the seat. United are in this government department reshuffle situation where they've appointed a caretaker to hold the seat until they appoint an interim manager who will hold them until the end of the season, and they'll have a permanent manager. It's like, this is Manchester United we're talking about here. And they need to have this kind of three-step plan to appointing a manager, which to me points to like a lack of planning. It means that up until this weekend, they didn't have the replacement lined up.
No plan.
That's a dereliction of duty, right? At that level.
Yeah,
for a club like United.
Even their commentary, right? When all of us were expecting it 2 months ago, a month ago, before the international window, they kept coming out in every morning to tell us, no, they're still sticking behind the manager, still sticking behind the manager, still sticking behind the manager. They've lost a lot of good opportunities in my belief, to actually have this plan in place because they're always sticking to the manager. This feels more like a knee-jerk reaction losing against Watford than it does feel like a planned kind of change in management.
But that's been Man United, if you think about it. Like, I think even Paul Merson mentioned, he said it was the reason probably Solskjaer struggled, but I don't think it really is. I mean, Maguire and them, I mean, the whole team was playing bad. I can't really blame the Ronaldo signing for it. But he says, Solskjaer, finishes second in the league. And then, like Musa saying, knee-jerk reaction, these guys see that City's going to sign Ronaldo, they sign Ronaldo, you know? But then Paul Morrison says that, look, that kind of messed up all his plan. But I think it's more than that. But I mean, yeah, that's been Man United. And if Celo will even agree with me, is that, before these guys weren't signing any players, you know, when Mourinho was there. And then Solskjaer was there the first season, they never signed anyone. And then what do? They sign, they spent huge money, good players, but they've only really signed the guys because, you know, there's a lot of pressure that they were getting. From the fans, you know, they could have signed other players, in the other transfer windows, but they've actually then again gone and said, look, we haven't finished well. Let's sign the players and just, you know, show them that we are doing something. And then here's Solskjaer also getting the brunt of that, at the end of it again. I just think that's been Man United for the past three, I still don't know how long, but yeah, they've been just reacting.
Yeah, so let's talk about this before, where you have like three seasons of nothing, then a couple of really big marquee signings, and people are like, oh, you see, they do invest. It's never part of a plan. It's just like, ooh, it's you know, it's like when you neglect your kid all year, and then you're like, oh, let me quickly go buy him a couple of ice creams just to, you know.
Christmas presents.
Like, you're just the ice cream man. You know, like,
it's a cycle. It's a cycle, this thing. You know what I mean? You know, the last big signings we did was when we did Mkhitaryan, we did Pogba, and then we did Zlatan, and then Eric Bailly. We did four of them at the same time, and then boom, quiet. And then we did a Diego Dalot after we came second, and then we did obviously now we did what's this Varane, Sancho, and thing, you know. So it's a cycle, but that's Man United for you. But yeah, I think we've spoken enough about Man United. I think we should jump on.
We'll move on just quick.
And also,
moving on to better.
Better things.
Man United.
We're talking about it.
Real quality. Yes,
this game just started as well. So
okay.
Well.
So quick one. So from Celo, you can tune out. You can tune out. I just want a quick fire.
I hear Van der Beek is starting.
Yeah, yes. and Martial has started as well. So yeah, so let's see.
Really interesting.
Toto has started today. Yeah, they just fouled him.
So Carrick is really throwing Ole under the bus, eh? Like,
yeah. I swear, I was telling this guy in the change rooms that Van der Beek should play every day.
That's true. That is true, though. That is true. That he's gonna show it.
Oh,
hey,
shoot!
That's
it. Phil Jones to start.
Hey, he's with the squad, guys.
Start
with the squad. He's with the squad, guys. I think he's on the thing.
Yeah, and he's mates with Carrick from when they played together. So he'll probably say,
yeah.
Mike,
give me a chance. You've seen Harry.
You've seen Harry. It can't get much worse.
Almost a goal from Scotty McTominay. It was a great cross from Alex Telles from a set piece, and Scotty McTominay just hit it into the side netting. Oh,
okay,
oh,
all
so
right,
close.
Okay.
It's time to move
on. If people want commentary, they can watch the game. So they don't have to come on for real commentary.
Yeah.
Right, it's a quick one. No, I'm taking control.
Claudio, everyone wants to hear the sexy voice. Come on.
Just make sure there's no tears. There's no tears at the end of
no
all
tears.
Of this.
I think the voice is sexy when the tears flow, boss. So let's hope the tears
emotion.
Anyway, okay. Gentlemen. So just quick fire quickly. Did he steady the ship? Yes or no? And then number two, do you think Carrick will be a decent interim manager? Those are two questions. Okay,
he's not an interim manager. He's a caretaker whilst they wait to appoint the interim.
The interim.
He must be measured in for what he is.
So just
Steve
yes
Bruce.
Yes
Steve Bruce is lined up for the interim role.
It's gonna go Carrick, Steve Bruce,
Poch.
And then Bruce. Right,
so Nick... and so the merry-go-round goes.
It's going to take over at PSG, presumably.
It's very interesting. He's using Ronaldo as the left winger and Martial as a central striker. So that's quite interesting, and I'm interested to see how it goes.
They tried to do it at Juventus.
And I didn't say Portugal. Yeah, they did it at Juventus. It didn't work. They tried doing it with Portugal now. Yeah. Just the other day, it didn't work with playing Ronaldo on the left. So all I'm saying is I've seen it not work so well. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, at Juventus, I saw him cut in and smack right corner. So, some games it does work. That I won't lie.
No, some games. But I'm saying over the course of the season.
Close it down, you bloody fucker!
The tears are coming.
Who is it? The players are all in now. They're coming. Danjuma is going to score.
Let me mute my mic. Sorry, guys. All right.
No one answered the question. No one really cares. I think everyone's done with the Man United thing. Let's move along. We're going to say Leicester City, Chelsea. It's about time we get a Chelsea input. Yeah, Moss has been MIA for a long time.
We didn't talk about
Chelsea.
What? Well, I was going to say, we didn't get to talk about Brendan Rodgers because this was a pretty good advert for replacing Ole.
Well, there we go. You cancelled. You can dive into that one. I think he dropped it quick.
He dropped that thing quick. Didn't he? They asked him and he dropped that speculation quickly.
Yeah, he said that. But then look what he did at Chelsea. That is exactly how Ole would have played it. So
he's been taking notes.
Yeah, he's sitting there on the sidelines. You guys have my number.
you see me giving away 3 points.
But I saw this coming.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. And like before the game, I you know what? Actually, recently of late, I've been full of confidence about how Chelsea have set themselves up and come to every match. They do come with a heightened sense of intensity. A professional approach. We've got a few injuries in players like Lukaku. But we still kind of, the manager has these boys all figured out, right? The defense is looking solid. Goalkeepers always bring out his best in the game. The midfield is just dominating every kind of game they step into with the high intensity. The movement up front is looking great. There were a few frustrating parts in the game where, the lads they were on top of the game, but they weren't playing with the width that he'd wanted. And that showed his frustrations as a manager of where he is, right? He's trying to get these guys to play a very precision type of football. And at this point, they're all executing on that. They're all kind of coming to the party and showing their value and showing their class. On the day, Leicester really weren't there. They were chasing shadows. Yeah, the whole day they were chasing shadows, and yeah, I think it shows just how good Chelsea is at this point in time. I think even with the injuries, the manager's got a system which is working for all the players, and they know exactly when and how to slot into that system. And yeah, it's players love playing for managers of this nature when they know their performance is going to be appraised objectively. That's why whenever the manager does make a change for a player here and there, the player still execute, and then he can then make a better decision for who comes in the next game or who gets left out. So it's perfect at the moment at Chelsea.
Aren't you concerned that your best defender's contract is coming up?
Rudiger, yeah, I am a little bit concerned. He's the player that's really, really shined over the past half of last season and this season so far. He's really come to the party and been instrumental in the character that he's given a lot of the defenders and the people around him. I am concerned, and I'm actually concerned about why the negotiating is taking so long. You know, it's like this is a club which has forked out quite a bit of money for players like Rudiger, like Kai Havertz, like Timo Werner. Like, there's quite a few players which have actually come in for really big paychecks, and to not be able to pay a player who's shown his quality at the club and is continuing to improve.
Probably signed a free contract with us.
you say you're a big team, Chip.
But I wonder,
one call to the land.
Because didn't Chelsea also, haven't they started to build around Silva in defence? And on that, have they not been? Is it maybe a case of them expecting him to step up and kind of do that role, so they don't want to end up overpaying for another defender is, you know, not that Chelsea necessarily needs to watch purse strings, but, you know.
Yeah, and my thing is the most expensive defender that I can recall at Chelsea is Ben Chilwell. The rest are relatively cheap to free. If you look at Thiago Silva himself, you look at Rüdiger, you look at Reece James, you look at Chalobah, Azpilicueta, and Alonso, Chilwell's actually the most expensive. And in that setting, I would have expected when we spoke about Thiago Silva coming last season, beginning of last season on a free, I was expecting it to be his last season or like last kick of a dying horse, you know. But it's really reflective of the professional he is and the quality at which he's played at to see him actually continue to pull out these type of performances. Chelsea's defense is bar none one of the best defenses in the English Premier League at the moment and in all of Europe at the moment. Yeah.
He wants to play at the World Cup. So I think they even said that he might stay for another season with you guys. But Rüdiger wants to be one of the top three highest paid players in the club. That's what I heard the rumor is, obviously. Lukaku's the highest paid player. He wants to be top three highest paid.
Yeah. If I'm looking at it objectively, just from a pure negotiation perspective, I'm looking at it going, this guy doesn't really give two shits whether or not he stays at Chelsea. He knows he's got the club by the ball saying, you know what, I'm going to ask for this much. If you're not going to give me this much, I'm going to go to another club that's going to pay it. And that way, at least by the club standard for the fans, I'm making it look like I want to stay. And if they don't give me what I want, then it's because the club don't want me to be there. And I think that's the angle he's taking from that side. But more from the footballing perspective, I mean, Lukaku, gentlemen, they're scoring without a strike at the moment. Morsa said they didn't really need Lukaku. What's the overall feeling from that angle?
It's Leicester City, guys. They're not in the best of form.
What happened against Burnley before the international break? They drew 1-1 at home. They struggled to break down a pub team. They struggled to break down a pub team. And now a team that's like Leicester, a bit more expansive, a bit more leaving spaces at the back. They exploited those spaces because Leicester's there to play. But a pub team like Burnley frustrated them at home and they drew 1-1. You know what I mean? So I think that needs to be taken into account. And then also other games that they played previously. They played against Juventus in Turin and they couldn't score a goal against Juventus in Turin. So I think we need to take those things into account.
A lot of teams with their starting 11 won't score against Juventus. You know, this is a solid side we're talking about. But I do hear what you're saying. There are games where you're going to need an out-and-out striker who just knows how to get the job done, create space, make a chance out of nothing, and they are going to miss that. I think they're going to miss Lukaku. The longer he's away, there will be games like that where they need someone who's just going to battering ram their way through and score a goal, and that's what he'll bring. And that's why sooner or later, when that injury goes away, Moss is going to be dying that thing that he's been so proudly growing.
I told you, gentlemen. I told you. My thing with Lukaku, and it still stands, right? Like, yes, he'll be able to bully a few of his opponents. But a player of that magnitude, a signing of that magnitude, you need some kind of BMT. And for me, he doesn't have it. And sometimes in those smaller games, he doesn't actually rise above everybody else. So that's where I'm still on the fence about Lukaku, right? About his contribution, his potential contribution.
But if you'd had him against Burnley, you would have thrown him on, right?
Yeah, to kind of bully. Yeah, definitely.
Well, that ends that conversation then. Moving along swiftly. I mean, here's an interesting one. Sam saying, just a small stat, Peter Cech holds the highest number of clean sheets in the Premier League, 202. If I remember correctly, Mendy could beat that. Who agrees with that?
What does he mean? Like, could beat it soon? Or Mendy, like, could beat it? Theoretically, Wonga could beat it, you know, like, it's not the same.
I have beaten it. No one scored against me.
It's a good thing you're not playing for Arsenal then, Wonga.
Can't get a game past Ramsdale these days. But I think Mendy is I don't think Mendy gets talked about enough, and I don't know what it is.
Yeah?
But you talk about 100%. Top keepers in the game at the moment, Mendy doesn't get a mention very often. But on current form, he's got to be top three in the world.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, at the moment, most definitely.
Easy.
And even he's come to Chelsea, yeah?
And he's not going to be there through AFCON. He's gone, right?
AFCON. Yeah, Senegal are playing in AFCON.
But Chelsea are fortunate that they've got a good defense. I know the team's going to get hit hard by this one, but
it's just a matter of admitting it. We're only losing two players, right, to AFCON.
Yeah, but then you've got Kepa there in goal.
Ziyech and Mendy.
No, Kepa can lose his head.
But Ziyech is fighting with the Moroccan manager, so he hasn't picked for the last qualifiers, so he might not be picked.
Okay, yeah. Then that's even better.
Yeah, I don't know. Mendy's a big loss, mate.
Yeah,
very big. I think Chelsea's with defense. That other guy that doesn't have arms. Lad, that can't take a fucking shot.
Right, Timo, we were talking about pub clubs. Let's talk about a pub club who have still got all the furniture inside, and they're trying to redecorate.
You need to remember now that Bruce isn't there, Newcastle can no longer drink like a pub club, so I don't think we're allowed to call them that anymore.
They're drinking martinis. Exactly. What are they drinking?
No pies, nothing, guys.
No bacon sandwiches, you know.
Funny you say that. You know, a lot of the journalists or the sort of media pundits who are mates with Steve Bruce, who protected him throughout the whole thing, sort of said, you know, those players weren't playing for him. And if you followed the sort of Eddie Howe story since he's been there, he put them through their paces doing sort of a protocol of testing to figure out where they were in terms of their fitness. And they built through the international break a level of fitness and obviously a training regime for the game against Brentford. Yeah. One of the things he did ban is quite a few things similar to what Conte did at Spurs from the canteen. I know one of them were biscuits by the tea and coffee counter. So it's just those small things.
Biscuits, guys. Why is the biscuits? I heard also Gerard said there's no salt or ketchup or something. Guys.
Why do they have no pudding, guys?
But why do they have them in the first place?
These clubs are not only catering to their playing staff. There are dudes in the back room who deserve a biscuit. You know, guys.
Yeah.
They're working for an elite club. Yeah. They're working for.
If you're not on the playing staff, you know, if you're the dude who sits by the sidelines tweeting the live events, like, give the man a pudding.
Give the man a banana.
Guys, did we?
And a pie.
Give the man a banana. And water.
I don't know what happened.
Water and a banana.
Everybody's got a trigger word. Maybe his is biscuit.
That seems
to be the trend, though. Because I also read Gerard's also gone in and banned fizzy drinks and stuff at Villa. Yeah.
Salt. Mm. No salt and ketchup, apparently, man.
But I think
also, I'm going to catch up myself, so I wouldn't miss that. But no salt. What do you put on your chips?
He wanted to drink this.
You're not eating chips, sir. You're not eating chips in the first place.
Hey, that's the special spice there that one ranges the league. Is that salt? You took out that. They've been having salt for so many years. Celtic taking the league. He took the salt out, and the Rangers got it. So maybe. Yeah.
But listen, boys, like I must say, so we obviously had a very unfortunate situation with Eddie Howe. Well, he had an unfortunate situation having a COVID test on the Friday and then testing positive. So it was a little bit of an anti-climax. But in terms of, guys, I'm actually delighted. We sit in the bottom of the log, but I can't explain to you what sort of performance we put in. If you never watched the game, like, I can tell you we were on the front foot. We took the game to Brentford. And obviously our flaws were there to be seen, which is maybe a good thing, but I can't remember when last we scored two goals, let alone three. And we probably should have won it in the end with the chance with Joelinton where he slips and St. Maximum had
23 shots, Nick. That's mad. But
yeah. Like, can you imagine? Like,
probably first equals time, their total from the rest of the season.
Listen, if you look at – this is the first time, I think, in 37 Premier League games where we've had more possession than the opposition. So, like, you know, that just shows season. You – he's been there. He's been there for 10 days or now it's been a bit longer, and he's changed the whole philosophy. And, you know, a lot of the pundits are saying, yeah, it's not what we need. We need something more pragmatic. But you know what? I think if we can go out and take games to teams, we'll put us in a position hopefully before the window where we can potentially go and buy a few more players to add to that. And you know, those types of performances, getting our best players to play well, to play in their positions. Can you imagine? imagine. Like that would be a great starting point. You know, it really showed on the weekend. I think there's a few players there that I would really sort of look at to ship out eventually. But I mean, guys, I've spoken about J7, Jolinton, the absolute donkey. You guys, if you want to see like a completely transformed player, watch that game. Like, he was all over the place, pressing, dribbling people, well taken goal. And I was like, is this a man possessed? Like,
but
honestly,
is that maybe, you know, again, just further indictment of Steve Bruce's style?
100%.
And I think this is a thing, like, I know when they first appointed Eddie Howe, and there were some people saying, oh, you know, that's not very ambitious. Newcastle should be looking for a proven winner, someone who's going to win the league. But the truth is they're not in a fight for the league right now. They're in a fight for survival. And in Eddie Howe, you've got someone who's been there. He's been at the bottom of the table. Obviously Bournemouth got relegated, but he knows how it goes down there. And he's also like got proven kind of caliber in the Premier League. And he's actually, I'm not an expert on these things. You'll know more than me, Nick. But from what I've read, he's quite innovative. He's quite forward thinking in how he plays the game and in how he trains him, how he sets things up. So you talk about the fitness tests and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's not something that was running under Bruce.
Yeah.
And I think and the fact that it's had such early impact in terms of their style of play is obviously really, really promising. There is still a lot of work to do for Newcastle.
Yeah,
they are still in very real risk of being relegated. We're quite close to Christmas now, and they're still bottom. So that's a big issue. I think he needs to get a few wins in the next couple of games. The Brentford test was a big one because Brentford have scored. I mean, obviously you guys conceded three goals, but Brentford have scored goals against a lot of sides this season. Yeah. They're a good team.
Yeah,
I think there will be easier games than this for Newcastle to really show what they can do. But the fact that, like you said, dominating possession, loads of shots, scoring goals, it's got to be all positive.
And what was quite interesting is you're playing against a Brentford team that likes to dominate possession themselves. So that was obviously a good thing. And then, like Wonga said, I mean, we had 23 shots at goals. Brother. I mean, at the goal, so I can't believe that. I think just the sort of, it was a breath of fresh air. There's a few players there that are sort of need to be shipped out. I was very disappointed with Darlow. Like, I'm a big fan of his, but it just looks like he can feel that Dubravka is coming back and he can maybe feel the pressure. And I think I would make that change straight away. And I would put Frederico Fernandez in for LaSalle straight away, straight swap and, go again, you know, against an Arsenal team who looked pretty decent in the first half, but very vulnerable at the back. And I think if we can just have a go again, you know, you've got nothing to lose away at the Emirates. Like, you've got nothing to lose.
I mean, is normally what gets discussed on a Thursday, but I think this is a really interesting game for both sides, the Newcastle-Arsenal game, because historically we know that when Arsenal lose in over the last 3 years, Arteta's had a wobble and they tend to lose more than one in a row. And that confidence, they've always had that soft underbelly. Newcastle were flying on the other hand. They're coming in, they'll be feeling positive. So that will be a really interesting game. It'll be a real test of how much Newcastle still have to do by January. And it'll also be a big test of just how far Arteta's really come. How much of a change has he implemented? Because if they go out and they stumble against Newcastle now, I think it's almost like, you know, one step forward, two steps back for Arsenal. So, I mean, I know that'll get unpacked in more detail on Thursday, but that's going to be a huge game.
And I think just to close off, it's going to be very important because we've got a very hard run of fixtures, but we've got Arsenal next. We've got Norwich after that and then Burnley after that. So if we can pick up, if we can pick up 7 points in those three games, that will be great. I think that will put us in a good position.
7 points, Nick. Isn't that a little bit too ambitious?
I think five there would be good. Norwich.
why shouldn't we be beating Norwich and Burnley? Like,
look what Dean Smith did with Norwich. Dean Smith walked in and won his first game at Norwich.
Currently above his,
listen, Eddie Howe nearly won his first game. If we had won that game, they wouldn't be saying that Newcastle's awful. If we're going to survive, we have to beat Norwich. We have to beat Burnley. Like, that's the reality.
That's true.
If we're not beating them, why are we going to? So
like Pum says, let's relegate that team. Right, let's talk about a team.
Mario, can you just tell us, are you okay, bro?
We're good. Let's talk about a team. I'm more than okay. Look there. Wonga's put his head down because he knows what's coming. Look there.
You've left your seat 4 times, so it's
you had cookies. Code word cookies.
Cookies.
I think it was biscuits specifically that we used.
Oh, yeah. Biscuits.
But on that note, gents, look, yeah, Arsenal, talk about still have a long way to go. You talk about the soft underbelly, all these things. Wonga's been on a recent tie, the undefeated run that they've been on. They've come to Anfield. He was somewhat, a little bit, I don't know, optimistic. Cocky. He was definitely optimistic. Whether what percentage that was.
I would say cocky. I would say cocky. I think that's all what it is. Let's not sugarcoat it.
Optimism. That's what it was. No. I mean, look at the run you're on. I'm
taking an umbrella with you, you know, like it won't rain today. I don't need my umbrella. That's optimism. What you were doing was coming on here, waving your face in front of all of us, hovering this high off your chair, you know, it's all about, we're coming for you. We're coming for you. And then you came for us and here we are.
You know, December's coming.
And I said it. You know, I said it even on last, when I said last week Thursday, and I had a fear that Arteta was going to do this, is that he's going to go to Liverpool and he's going to try something funny. When I say something funny, he's going to come and do something different to the other games that he has been winning. They've been undefeated for a long time now. Only drawn two in that long run. And they started against Liverpool. I think the people will say the first half we were, they'll say the first half we were good, but they were. I mean, I was sitting here with another Liverpool fan, a friend of mine, Wayne, and I told him, look, I mean, what they're doing, that, goodness me, is flipping risky. Ramsdale, yeah, he didn't get it wrong in the game, but it's what Liverpool want. They want you playing at the back. Oh, lovely. We don't have to pass the ball. We're going to just tackle you.
Who made that pass?
It was Tavares, and then there was one that Lukonga did as well. Lukonga had many passes that he did wrong. Yeah, and listen, Nick, he was going forward. Tavares is someone that always usually goes forward. He was going forward and then he passed the ball back. That for me tells me, and I think even Arteta will take, and it's fine. And like he said, it's at the end, like we'll learn from this game. Hopefully they do. He told his team literally is that they want to pull from the back. I think Claudio, you'll agree with me on this. They try to pull from the back, suck Liverpool in, and then they were going to try and play behind. But what confused me about this, even the playing behind part is that when Liverpool were pressing us at the back and they wanted to try and play the ball behind, there was no one even making that run behind. Aubameyang was still in our half. So I was very confused in the game plan. It looked like, okay, we pass and then we don't know what to do, you know? And I think it was a very, never mind just changing a game plan in a game against Liverpool, but I mean, what he wanted to do. Oh goodness me! I think Klopp was smiling when he saw the first 10 minutes what they were trying to do. It was inevitable. I said, we're going to get punished. That was definitely going to happen.
Hang on, Wonga. First and foremost, I just want to say welcome, M Dog Guru, who said Ollie definitely threw that game. And I think there's some conspiracy there. You know, I like my conspiracies, but I think he wanted the sack, so threw that game. But going back to the Arsenal sort of thing, I know you're critiquing him for doing what he did, but let's be honest: the first 20 minutes. They weren't too bad. I don't want to say they were controlled, but Liverpool had I think it was 70% possession, but we weren't really creating chances that were blatant chances. I still said, like, if you look at Man United, a team that's not coached, you look at Arsenal, you can see the manager's clearly got something he wants the players to be following. Whether or not they executed as something else. And obviously he goes on to the side of the pitch and Arteta gets the crowd going. That's what he actually does. Because the crowd were quiet for 20 minutes. They wanted to take on Klopp. And then all of a sudden everyone's
trying to fight Klopp. That's not even him. Guys, Arteta is the model gentleman. That's not even him, guys. Like him fighting like that. I just couldn't understand, guys. That shows.
Just trying to get the players going.
But I think.
They were both Arteta and I can't say it was Arteta only. They were both treating each other. If there was no one between them, it would have been rock and roll, man.
But hang on, gents. Listen, you said they were both there. Of course, they were both there.
Come on.
No. Listen, there was a catalyst. Arteta was. You know what the thing was? He sparked.
So it's a.
No.
He sparked it all.
Of course he did. He was the one that went at Klopp. And then Klopp was like, well, okay, my team's, if you've got to be really strategic about what the manager does there, he can see the crowd's quiet. Let's give them something to cheer about. He gets stuck in. We go from Atletico Madrid where they're trying to get Mane sent off. He felt clearly Arteta was trying to do the same thing. And then he sparks it up and all of a sudden the crowd gets behind him. My thing is from an Arsenal perspective, I'm like, I don't mind seeing my manager doing that. Cause finally, if Ole had to do that as an example, I'd be chuffed because there would be some interest. He's already moved on. But you know what I'm saying? Like Arsenal, as an Arsenal fan, I'm going, here's a guy who actually gives a shit about my team. Whether or not it worked in this scenario is something else. But in the end of the day, what it was a team that has their style waxed versus a team that is still learning. A lot of young players with the confidence isn't there to the same level. Chad, you could see the players were somewhat intimidated.
And I to think, add to that, you see the thing. If you are conceding 70% possession in the first 20 minutes to a Liverpool team who punish everybody they come across when they do have more possession, it's very scary. Already, it's going to be a very difficult thing.
Look for me, I want like. Sorry, you go, Matt. You're speaking.
I think to Wonga's point, I think from when you looked at Arsenal at the start of this game, the difference was, and I think to a certain extent, it may have been them kind of feeling somewhat intimidated by the situation because people were talking about this being for the first time, really. This was the first time where in quite a while where Arsenal were going in against Liverpool and people were saying Arsenal had a realistic chance at this game. For a long time, they've come in as underdogs. And it was almost like some of their dynamism was gone. You look at how they'd been playing in games before this. They were very much on the front foot. They were stretching defenses. They were creating chances. And this game, as much as they weren't terrible in the first 20, 25 minutes, they also weren't as good as they had been. They weren't playing with that same speed. They weren't being as incisive. Yes. And then when it turned over, you know, it was sort of that 20-minute period just before and after half time where Liverpool scored their first two goals. And after that, the tide turned and Arsenal were completely kind of shell-shocked, very much in themselves. And I think I'm not an Arsenal fan, as you know. But if I was an Arsenal fan, that's what would disappoint me a bit, was that they came into this game on such a run of really good form where they were playing that on the front foot, stretch defenses, create chances. The clever runs from Lokonga weren't there, you know, all of that stuff. And I think that's where there is that frustration where this was a game where not that they maybe should beat Liverpool. Liverpool are a good side, but they could have maybe put up more of a fight, been more of themselves before they ended up conceding goals.
I think, you see, that's the, like, I think you said it properly there at the end, you know, is that for me, even when we actually gave Liverpool the game, you know, the first goal, sharp, that was their work. Ramsdale, could have done better, but he also made good saves in the beginning as well. So you can't, he saves things that he shouldn't have saved. I think it was 3-4 shots, if I'm not mistaken. At the form he's in, he would have said, you should have saved that. But then again, it's this thing of, Arsenal were not doing, and again, Liverpool, sharp, they beat us. It's a team, anything, but.
We didn't beat you. We
listen.
There was no beating.
Listen.
Didn't drive. It wasn't kind. It was a whipping.
So, but for me, if I were to say anything or not, you don't pass blame, but I think Arteta would put his hand up and say, look, he tried. I think what he tried to do was the wrong thing. You know, I mean,
This is where I'm curious about this. Okay. I'm curious about this. So everyone here and Nick, the coach up there, I'd also like to get your opinion just from the coaching perspective. You know, your team, I know you talk about past games, but the opposition's not at Liverpool. You're playing other opposition. So you can be on the front foot. You can gain that confidence. Now you're telling me, You guys are somewhat disappointed, or Wonga, you're somewhat disappointed because the manager decided to go, let me try to do something. Because if I go toe to toe with this team, this Liverpool team now, likelihood of winning is probably going to be very low. Right?
How does he know that?
I'm going to, come on, man. Are you going to go toe to toe? How many teams go toe to toe with Liverpool?
Listen, Arsenal have been playing well. That's what I say. Arsenal playing, what they've been doing has been working. It's been giving them wins. People thought we're going to lose those games. People thought we're going to lose those games. And now
finally,
we have it for me.
Winning games against
we Britain have and, all. But, and, okay, look at this, Nick. If we lose the game, I would have preferred it that you tried to play toe to toe with them, and then You lose it that way. Because now he's tried something else now. And he's just got pumped 4-0 by doing something that I could have told. I told you on Thursday, Claudio, that if they do this, they're going to get pumped. I literally said it. If we try and sit back and try to do play another game, play another way that we've been playing before, I literally said we're going to get smacked by Liverpool.
That's the only thing he could have done. Happened? That's what I'm saying. The reason we scored the goals we scored is because of player individual mistakes that were done by an inexperienced team. That's what it is.
But that's what I'm trying to tell you. Why are we trying to play a game that requires a lot of experience? You're telling me inexperienced players. So you've got inexperienced players, and then Wait, Kari, I haven't even finished my point. You haven't even let me finish. Listen. We try to play.
Calm.
You've got. Listen.
This is a family show.
But listen, guys, the whole season.
We'll see Arsenal lose, champ.
Guys, the for 9-10 games, you've been playing something that's been working. You know, you've been playing something that's been working. Oh. And for me, I would have said, try go do it against Liverpool. I think for me, Arsenal fans would have been happier that way. Now we go try and play this. And I mean, Tavares and them, we know them. I've seen them the whole season. They've been playing forward, running forward. Then they go and they try to play backwards. Those are things I just don't understand. There were many, even, what's his name? Lukonga as well. He looked, especially after Tavares made the first mistake, Lukonga looked very edgy. And it's not, he gave it one pass, but there were many other passes. I think there were three or four, including that, the one that, that led to the goal that Lukonga, that Lukonga was not comfortable with. It's a game they weren't comfortable playing.
I think it highlights to me how far behind the top four Arsenal are. Similar to us in Leicester. Look, Leicester tried to play the game, but we were just head and shoulders above them in terms of quality on the ball and intensity on the field. And that was a sharp reminder to them and to ourselves about like where we each are in our journeys. We are looking to get into European football and win that, and you guys are probably looking to just get into top eight.
But Musa, tell me this now. Like, even with against the other teams, Arsenal has been creating a lot of chances of scoring, right? This one, it's against Liverpool. It's limited them. You know, it's a game that now you've tried to be a bit like, let's say, pragmatic, you can say, and the opportunities are not there. You know, for me, why not go for the win against Liverpool? You know, go for the win. The points will put you in a good place instead of trying to play like the thing I always say is like the guys trying to play chess. Oh, now you're trying to go. Like we've just won. We're on a good run of form. Why don't you try to put it up against them? And then we lose that way. I would have been happier losing that way than the way we lost this weekend. It is one game. I'm not saying now that Arsenal are terrible. It is a learning curve. And I just hope that we learn from that. Liverpool with a better team. They've got the better players. They were better quality. I can't deny it.
We should have gone. Respected Liverpool too much on the day for them to change
it. Yes. I saw it the moment we started. In 10 minutes, we're doing funny passes. That's what Liverpool feeds off. We've never done this the other 9 games. That's what I'm trying to understand. Why do it now against Liverpool? Why? That's the only thing I'm trying to understand.
Don't worry, Wonga. I'll come and get another 3 points from you on Saturday.
You play like a kid against Liverpool.
Just so I can see you angry, man. Just so I can see.
I tell you what, guys.
He's been having too much fun. None of us
have the emotional range that Wonga's brought to the show this year. Think about the depression that he has showcased. The highs, the euphoria, and now the passion and the anger. You know, it's like a Spanish soap opera.
Telenovela.
We can only hope to bring such acting prowess to our team support.
Yes, I agree, Sam. Sam, I agree with you there. That's the wrong opponent to try to do what he did. 100%.
So, football that doesn't make us sad.
Let's go to the other side of North London.
Yes. Well, this was an exciting game. The first half, Spurs. The depth of Wonga's depression, you know. I can't match it. When I was down, you never. And I think we can all remember that. Whenever you feel like you're down, remember you're not Spurs winning a game sad like Wonga. You know, you're never that sad. You've always got something to smile about. The first half Spurs played exactly how everything they've done wrong for the last, you know, 8 odd games or whatever. There was no incision. Very kind of stodgy on the ball. flustered at the back, and Leeds took a well-deserved lead before halftime. The team talk at halftime was obviously pretty solid, and the team came out the second half was much better from Spurs. They were better controlled. The runs were more kind of more creative. They were really stretching the defense, and it kind of felt from sort of the fifth, sixth minute of the second half, it felt like we were going to win. It just, you know, you sometimes get that feel. You just know this looks like a game we're going to pull this off. And when we did, obviously the winner, Reguilon's kind of tapping off the free kick. It was, you know, you're half lucky with that, but he ran in at just the right time. It's his first league goal for Spurs. And I think it was huge in that it was obviously Conte's first league win. It was the first time we've come from behind in a while. The team really pulled together. There was a clear kind of decision collectively. We're going to play this aggressively. We're not going to try to sit behind the ball. We're not going to try to defend our way to the end of the game. And the second half was fantastic. It was really cool to see. Obviously Kane still struggles to score a goal in the league, and that's going to continue. Although he was the player that finally had a shot on target, our first shot on target for nearly three hours of football. So, it was a big day. And I think a lot of positives to take from it. I think Conte will be under no illusions as to how far there is still to go. But if we play like we did in the second half of that game, much more. And I know this is only Leeds. Leeds are having a really bad season by their standards. And there's still kind of some work to be done. I think we're not quite as fluid as we've been. Even Son looks a little bit off it. You know, he's normally the one who's making those runs, who's at least doing something. Yeah, Sam's completely right. Something is still lacking in Spurs attack. Yeah, I think part of it's Kane. I think it's too easy just to blame him alone. I think we are at times, the movement's not great. We're kind of, you know, historically you watch Spurs and when we're playing well, there's always like players making those extra runs and it drags players out of defense. It's what I always used to think of Ali doing. Ali was always that player who'd just do a run that you wouldn't think of and it would create this bit of space and someone would just do a little dinky ball through and suddenly we've got players in behind. And we're not quite doing that anymore. And it's not just down to Kane. He's a big factor. He's definitely not himself. He's definitely not pulling his weight. But I don't think it's just him. I think the whole attack seems to not quite have found that killer instinct again. But if we can find that and if we can keep playing like we did in the second half of this game, I think there'll be good things coming our way. So
I love that celebration at the end from Conte. But Matt, surely you can give us your impersonation of what that team talk went like.
At halftime.
I can't do the accent. But
at least you've got the hair for it. You know what I mean?
I don't know. I mean, my hair's all right, but it's not Conte-esque. Well.
Yeah, because he had implants.
Do you reckon he just did that? Did he not even say anything? He just stood there, running his hand through his hair for 15 minutes.
How do you feel about the fact that each player, the fact that the fans were booing the team off?
Yeah, I thought that was harsh. I don't like this new habit. I thought, you know, it's 45 minutes
of football. Maybe it's not harsh enough. That's why United sat with Ollie for so long. That's all I'm saying. Look at Daniel Levy just getting him going. You've got a top manager now. If the players aren't performing, it's on the players. That's what it is.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. Look, I think to a certain extent, a lot of Spurs felt that way about the first half. I think it wasn't good enough. It was really frustrating. It was kind of like you're doing the exact same mistakes that you've been doing time and time again. I still don't think you need to boo players at halftime. I think they knew that wasn't good enough. I think they were going to get a bollocking from Conte no matter what. But, I still, you know, it worked, I guess. You know, I don't know if we should maybe start booing every halftime just to kind of mix it up and see if that's how we start to get a performance out of the players. But, I think the players themselves, some of them are starting to kind of really show who they are. I think Højbjerg in particular is one of those players who's just really stamping his authority. We're starting to see the good player that he could be. I saw Sam asked who was the best player against Leeds. It's hard to tell because it was quite a good team performance. Moura had a good game. I thought Højbjerg was immense again. He's back to his best. Kind of, he's all over the field. He's imposing. You know, he gets in the way. He breaks up play really, really well. He's really good at just breaking down the other team's attack. Obviously,
he's definitely going to be a very important player for a Conte team.
Yeah, he always – Conte likes that kind of player, that sort of – that player who's in a bit of involved in everything, midfielder who gets everywhere and does a bit of it all. And he obviously scored the goal. It wasn't a striker's goal. The finish was – you know, it looked like he didn't quite hit it right, but it went in and that's all that matters. I thought he had a really good game. Reguilon had a really good game too. I think he was really bombing down the left. I do like us with three at the back. I think it gives Reguilon a lot more freedom to be attacking.
He's good going forward.
He's really good. His crosses are awesome. Obviously, we're not seeing the benefit of it now because Kane's not getting on the end of them. But I think we had a couple of players there with a shout.
We all know what Alonso did under Conte at Chelsea. So let's see what he can do.
Yeah, exactly. So I think there's a lot of signs, a lot of reasons to be optimistic, Wonga. You know,
I'll optimistic.
Optimistic, cocky? Perhaps not cocky, but optimistic about Spurs' future. Yeah. I reckon, you know, it was a very pleasing performance, but I think the challenge now is that, and where Spurs' big challenge has been sort of since towards sort of the end of Poch's era is consistency. We are incredibly inconsistent in the way we play. So if we can keep that level of intensity and that the professionalism that we had in the second half over an extended period of time, then I think that will bode well. And Conte's the kind of manager who will, you know, he accepts nothing less than that. He talked about it a lot during his time at Chelsea, particularly at his time at Juventus. Kind of, this is what I expect. This is what I want from my players and all of that. So I think that will be a big factor. And players like Højbjerg, players like Reguilon are going to play a huge role. I was really happy to see Winks get a run out. I don't think he was a little bit off the pace at times, but it was good to see him out because he's a popular local lad and he is a really good player. There was a time where he was playing for England regularly and his range of passing in the midfield was probably one of the best that England have had in ages. He's obviously gone off the boil a little bit. Is that on the comment on Winks or is the United game? I mean,
I don't know. One perspective was trying to dribble someone like, no need to dribble. Sorry, just.
Carrick's told him he can go dribble now.
No need to dribble. And he can't cross, dude. That guy also has to figure out how to cross.
But defensively, he's pretty solid.
He's very good defensively.
But
yeah, fair enough.
Anyway,
you should go play for Newcastle. Just saying, keep clean sheets at the back. That's all I'm saying.
But so I think overall, very positive for Spurs. Important to build that consistency. I think that's where we've been lacking because we've had good performances under, we had a couple of really good performances under Nuno. We've had good performances under Mourinho. We had a couple of really good performances under Ryan Mason when he was managing. But the consistency is where we've always lacked. So if you can instill some consistency, I'll be happy.
If I can just step in here with regards to Conte taking over at this moment in time for Spurs Club and seeing his reaction after the weekend, which, by the way, Nick has obviously already said he's enjoyed it. If I'm looking at what Klopp did when he took over Liverpool, we know the club was in an iffy state. We know the fans were booing, leaving. They weren't really on side with the team and the management. And it was kind of stuck. Klopp was stuck with these players. And you could, if you want to, liken it to a similar situation that Conte has inherited here. The only question being from a Conte perspective, and if you're a Spurs fan, is how long will this tenure be? Because we know he doesn't go the distance. So that's the one thing that I think there should be a question
mark. In Spurs' recent history, Poch is the exception. We normally don't have managers doing very long. You know, prior to Poch, we had Yol, who did about 3 years. Redknapp had a little bit of time, but Spurs managers historically don't last long. I wouldn't say we don't have the revolving door quite as hectically as Watford, for example. But we've never had managers do massively long tenures. Yeah, people have never, you know, I don't even, from what I understand, they don't necessarily even write the names on the door anymore. It's just manager. Current manager. I wouldn't be too worried about that. I think what Conte will give us is if he brings in a certain amount of stability, if he creates an identity and sort of gets the players firing again, I don't think anyone will mind if he ends up leaving two seasons down. You know, if he wins us something or doesn't win us something, I think it's yeah, look, some silverware would be great. FA Cup or something like that would be amazing. But
you guys win anything.
Yeah, anything would be
any
great.
Cup,
League Cup, you know, the Audi Cup. I'm not that far.
Audi Cup. Imagine.
Yeah, the Daniel Levy inaugural, like just
invitational.
But, I don't think any Spurs fans are worried about, oh, but he's going to leave after 2 years. You know, that's not really something we concern ourselves with. If he does, you never know. Cause I mean, he stayed at Juventus for a very long time. If he finds a project he really believes in and enjoys what he's doing, he might stick around. But I don't think we're necessarily that kind of club.
Right, Jensen. On that note, thank you, Matt. I just want to say before we move on to the final thoughts, can everyone, and it's going to be a nice little quick fire. We're going to start with Selo, go Nick, Wonga, Matt, and then Musa. And what we're going to say is we're going to give our cool moment of the weekend. Which moment was that for you, Selo?
Cool moment for me on the weekend was, I think, Wonga being humbled.
Hey.
That's ice cold moment of the weekend.
That's ice cold. That's very ice cold.
Moment of the weekend. I don't know if anyone did manage to see any highlights of the Newcastle game, but the flag display in the Gallagate Inn was incredible. Eddie Howe's black and white army. This is our city. This is Newcastle. It was quite special. If you see it live and hear the music in the background, it is quite a sight to be seen.
Did you cry a bit?
No, I just get goosebumps every time. So
it's funny. It's cool. Funny how Nick always goes for the black and white moments, doesn't he? Anyway, Wonga.
Oh yeah, Louis look, said Rodri's goal. Yeah, that was actually a great goal.
Yeah, that was a good goal. Well, for me, it's
you see what you did. We had momentum, and you threw this man off his bus.
Sorry.
Because you coming from under the bus, now you want to let him just ride the bus for a bit there. Let's go there, Wonga.
No, for me, it's Arsenal finishing again in the top five. Considering where you guys started from.
How's that a moment?
How's the reach? How's the
moment in the top weekend.
Five? It's not the final four. That's
sort of like the cool moment to remember these guys are used to at the end and you're like, thank God, that's over.
That's yeah. Just sit to Musa. Hey, he's right. That's good for me.
Matt, what do you got?
My cool moment of the weekend is Reguilon's goal. He's such a player. He really gives everything for the team. I follow a lot of Spurs' social feeds, obviously, and he's always just such an optimistic character. Not cocky, Wonga, but optimistic. He's just really cheerful, really buzzes for the team, really gives his all. And he just seems to also just really love playing football. Like, he seems like, you know, if we got to play it, like, you'd just be like overawed. Like, I'm playing football for a living. He seems like that kind of dude. And I always, whenever I think of him, do you remember last season against Arsenal when Lamella scored that Rabona and it was out of nowhere in a game we eventually lost anyway. And Reguilon was the player standing behind him, just holding his head like, And I think, So when he scored that goal and it was just a perfect moment. I'm really glad it was him. So that was my cool moment at the weekend.
Shout out. I think, I agree with Vads and Louis. Like, having Stevie G come back with the result has been epic to see. I think he's got a beautiful career ahead of him in the Premier League. But Rodri's goal, wow-wee, what a rocket. That was a proper hit of the ball. He struck that like top-notch quality, and he showed on the day that, you know, these guys are just really from another planet. So it was good to see Rodri's goal, and that's my cool.
Did you see that pass? I think, was it for Sterling?
Which pass?
That goal's probably better for me than the rocket. The rocket's good, but I mean, that pass was delicious.
It was deliciousness.
That's delicious.
Right, gents. I don't know. Does everyone want me to say my moment? Does everyone want me to say it? Okay. Well,
go on. Nah, not really.
It's got to be Minamino coming off the bench and his first touch being a goal. That was a cool moment.
That's cool.
Yeah. Right, gents. Now brings us down to or time to the final thoughts of the show. Settle. Let's hear it.
I thought that was my final thought.
Yeah, Settle's watching Champions League.
It's half time now, so it's still 0-0 in that game. I think, let's see what happens with Man United. It's a new dawn. But we need to definitely sort out boardroom level stuff. I don't know how we're gonna figure that out, because that would mean the Glazers need to leave, and that will take some time. But yeah, let's see what happens. Big game against Musa this weekend, and Wanga to come as well. So yeah, some exciting stuff. I actually want to look forward to watching Man United again. I didn't care about the match this past weekend. I was not watching the game. So I haven't been caring for a bit. But that's more because our manager shouldn't have been there. But he's gone now. Let me start caring again.
Tough times will still continue.
Didn't you also think it was weird that they had that sort of interview with him, and then he started crying why did they do that to the manager?
Why did they
like,
do that, bro?
Yeah,
he requested it. He requested it, apparently.
Yeah, but they're like,
so
come
stupid,
on,
bro. Just let him go, bro.
Doing it just to be a legend, or it.
Just let him issue a statement.
Also, after he lost to Iceland, and then they fired him.
But there was all that talk about it. Remember, there was all that talk where they said they're going to do it in a respectful way.
Yeah. they did it in a way so it could be a little bit more of a legend than Steve Bruce.
I don't know. It's sort of more legendary. Seven more legend points.
My final thoughts, Newcastle United are back. We still haven't won a Premier League game this season, but hopefully that might come this weekend.
But you're going for 7 points, boy, in the next three.
Oh, man, that's funny.
You're coming.
Oh, man. You know, Man United talk about a new dawn, but imagine saying we're back when you're still bottom of the league and you haven't won a game.
It's easy to back, see 7 baby. Points coming.
It's coming, guys.
Love it.
Trust me.
For me, I was thinking about it quite a bit. After I watched the Man United game, it's another team. But, yo, the things I saw from Maguire, you know, I know the guys are saying, Ole, make wrong decision, whatever, he must go. But yo, for a captain, my man, I was shocked. And it happens week in, week out. And especially the goals I think, was it the first goal they conceded or the second one? it was funny when you watched the replay and looked where he was and where he should have been, you know. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. But it also makes you think. I mean, it also makes you see how much pressure these managers have. Never mind it being just Man United, but hey, you know, you've got to. I mean, if your defenders are doing that, how can you win? But also, why are you playing him every game? Also, but yeah, that's another thing.
And giving him the armband.
That's my thought. And giving him the armband. Yeah, that's his fault. Yeah.
Did you even see like after the game, after getting the red card, he was spotted out in the night. Going out.
A potting, yeah.
That's so crazy. Yeah. Dude, imagine you're the captain of the club.
No, but like, you know, these are still also dudes who do a job. Like, you know, when you finish work, if you have a crap day at work, you still go out and have dinner with your family. You're not going to be like, look, I dropped the ball at work today, so I'm just going to sit at home a smack bum.
No, it's not.
I think it's a bit different to like soccer.
I'm not going to. Yeah, it's
football.
Yeah, you see, look what Aman said.
What's Aman saying?
One more time. That one. You're going to tell your own father. Sorry, we cannot celebrate your birthday.
Come to the house. Sorry, Dad.
What if it's his last birthday or something? And then you didn't go because you weren't good at work.
If the father watched the game, the father would have went to the house to go console his boy as opposed to fucking saying, let's go
as a father, I'd say it's my birthday. We are doing it behind closed doors so no one can see you because we know.
I've got sons and I would tell them. I'm not going to change my birthday plans
just
because
hope your sons
you turned your brain
like
off
Maguire.
For 90 minutes. No.
Just hope they don't defend like Maguire.
No.
Just make sure they defend better than
okay,
Maguire.
Look, to a lot of us, Maguire is the Man United captain, but in his family, he's one of the family. The whole family can't change all their plans because one dude had a bad day at work. You know, what if he's got a brother who drives a forklift and drove a forklift into a tanker and blew it up and killed six people? They're not going to cancel dinner for that.
They must go celebrate that dinner at Maguire's house after the forklift incident. Maguire's house.
Maguire's done worse, in my opinion, actually. For Klopp to be easy.
That'll be my final thought. My final thought is that we must let footballers on the field will judge them for their football. What they do off the field, if it's not breaking the law, really, guys, let's leave the man alone. Okay. Like, he had dinner with his father for his birthday.
Let him live his life.
Okay.
If I was a footballer, I would do exactly the same. And I would expect the same.
Can you imagine if you were out with him afterwards and he was like, bro, you're the reason I got sacked. Now you're going
imagine you're sacked with your buddies and then your boss comes and taps you on the shoulder like, do you think you should be here celebrating after what you did?
And Matt, you were the guy who didn't file the report. Because you didn't file the report, your boss got fired. And now you're celebrating drinking.
Yes, and then I'd send him a text, and I'd be like, look what I'm doing.
You mentioned things like that, and it reminds me of players like Balotelli, who literally didn't care what was happening on the field and was living his own life, whether he's on the wrong side of Milan or whatever.
All those guys. No, but look at all those Brazilian players would always leave the season to go to Carnival as well. Romario did it. Ronaldinho did it. You know, we don't think any of them.
They were winning.
But they're putting balls in the back of the net.
It's allowed. If you're winning, you can do whatever.
Hey, they were scoring. They were scoring and then like going off time.
Ronaldinho used to go after the game.
Literally, yeah, celebrate.
Exactly. Yeah, I used to go. And the nightclubs, man.
And you're also arrested, by the way. Just putting that out there. Yes, Mosa, final thoughts. Let's go.
Final thoughts from my side. It's great watching Chelsea at this point in time. The confidence is up.
For Chelsea fans only. Because it's not fun for like a neutral fan. Who enjoys watching Chelsea?
No, Claude, it's fun for neutrals as well, man.
Don't put your words in a neutral's mouth.
Speak for yourselves, guys. Speak for yourselves.
I'll agree with Sam on that one.
There's so many good things to see.
Shameful one.
It's like
their defense. That thing is, it's you can only admire it. The way they defend as a unit, and it's more than just defending.
That's
what I admire about Chelsea.
Wonga has to admire Chelsea because he has nothing to admire there at Arsenal.
Yeah, he's not a neutral. Yeah. He's not a neutral. He's like a general lover.
We've been there where you are, and we're now here at the top. Come on, guys.
Top five. Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. It wasn't long ago Arsenal were bottom. Imagine if Newcastle did that, guys.
They could. Nick, it's possible. Trust me.
Then we're going to get to discover Nick's emotional range the way we've seen Wongas. It could be beautiful.
But I haven't seen Nick sad to be at the bottom. He's kind of like in a celebratory mood.
No, he says we're
back.
Yeah, we have Rudy on a pre-contract. We'll probably sign one or two Liverpool players, a couple of tired Arsenal players.
He's celebrating his father's birthday on the ground at home.
He's available.
Also, I mean, it's quite a tough ask asking the neutrals to weigh in, Mosif, because you did start speaking about Chelsea. The likelihood is they've logged off by now. But to finish your final thought.
Oh wow! Okay, well, for us fans of Chelsea, I think it's beautiful to watch us play. We're on the highest. It's quite comforting to know that we come into a game confident and we're going to bring some really good intensity and performances.
Confident,
so.
Not cocky, Wonga.
Yeah, yes, confidence. Mosif.
Confidence.
So that's my final thoughts, man. We're playing really well. We're playing really good football.
All right, gentlemen. And that pretty much wraps up the show. For everyone who joined us, thank you very much. If you have not liked, subscribed, or told a friend, a brother, uncle, sister, or stepbrother, or even a long-time friend that you've never spoken to in the past 20
enemy.
Years, probably enemy, this is a good time to tell them there's something like Goal Lounge that you can get on board.
This could heal the wounds. True. You could make a friend of a past enemy. Go back and be like, look, I know we've never seen eye to eye in the past, but come look at Wonga's emotional range, the depth, the emotion, the tears, and it will heal that friendship.
Heals. Do that on Goal Lounge, yes. And also a reminder, Matt, can you show everyone your beautiful, beautiful shirt that you're wearing there? Let's see it.
There we go. Look at that.
What does it say? Can everyone tell us what it says? What does it say? Everyone?
Family Club, boys. Family Club.
Family Club.
Welcome to the Family Club.
Family
right.
Club.
Like the mafia. Or one of those weird cults. Once you're in, you're in.
Easy. This is an account.
Right, if you don't know what to be,
yeah,
be cool.
No, be Newcastle.